You're listening to a podcast from Blogging Heads TV.
Hi, I'm Robert Wright. I run the Non-Zero Foundation, which produces all the shows on Blogging Heads TV and Meaning of Life TV. We host a variety of voices, some of them pretty unorthodox, and we encourage dialogue that is sharp but civil. We think fostering constructive conversation is especially important now that America and the world are looking kind of fragile. If you agree that our mission is important, I hope you'll consider helping us shoulder the cost. You can do that by becoming one of our cherished patrons at patreon.com/nonzerofoundation. That's NONZEROFOUNDATION. Thanks. We need your help, and we deeply appreciate it.
Hello, Bill.
Good afternoon, Matt.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the DMZ. And I like the shirt. What is that?
This is, you know, this is my Aussie Rules North Melbourne Kangaroos jersey, which I got when I was in Melbourne many years ago. And the Aussie Rules football grand final is this weekend. It is Richmond versus Geelong. Two Melbourne teams.
Yeah, they're my team.
Richmond's going for dynasty. This would be their third premier in 4 years if they win, and they knocked off the regular season leader of Port Adelaide to make it to the finals. So
sweet Adelaide, great song. Now I see you got a Primus on there. I take it that's like a '90s thrash band or something.
No, this is their telecom company.
So AFL is not the American Football League, I assume.
No, it's Australian Rules Football League. And they've been playing their season, I think, without fans. Now, I probably won't see the final live. So no spoilers. No spoilers in the thread. Don't ping me on Twitter or Facebook and tell me who won. Probably be a few days before I get to watch. But I do plan to watch.
Speaking of... Of things that you're planning to watch, there's a Rudy Giuliani Borat.
Don't video. Spoil that. I want to see Borat too. I saw a headline across my transom. I didn't want to read the story. Let's save it for after I can see the movie.
I was going to devote my entire episode today to that. I've been doing nothing but prep on that, so I'm at a loss, Bill.
Did you see Borat 1?
I think I did. Yeah, I did. When it came out years ago.
Okay.
Years
ago. So were you planning to see Borat 2, or are you now intrigued to see Borat 2?
I was a little. I mean, I'm torn by the Sacha Baron Cohen, whatever the guy's name is. Mm-hmm. I find some of it funny, and I find some of it, obviously disturbing and troubling. So I was torn. I'm torn on it.
I forget if I've told the story on air when I got duped by Sacha Baron Cohen.
Oh, I don't think I know this story.
Oh, I mean, I think I've tweeted about it before. But so this was when he was doing Ali G, and Ali G hadn't aired yet, so no one knew what Ali G was, and I was a deputy communications director at a women's rights legal nonprofit. And so media inquiries generally got routed to me to be filtered and to be tasked to other people in the organization. And so I got this message from United World Productions looking for a lawyer to be a panelist regarding immigration. It would be in D.C. And I was based in New York. We had a D.C. office. And it was going to be for a BBC show geared towards teenagers. And so I contacted the DC office, said, would one of the lawyers be available for that? They were. And so I wasn't on site for it.
Good. Now it's starting to come back. Maybe we did discuss this once.
Okay. Well, you know, people might have missed it. So, so I get a call afterwards from the person who went. She was like, that was really weird. I mean, he was dressed very strangely and he had these odd questions, and, you know, they said it was for, you know, teens. So I guess that's why, but we were all very confused by it. And I didn't think much of it at the time. Yeah. Again, you know, BBC for teens, never going to see it, whatever. And then the New York Times had an article about the previewing the show, and the people on the panel saw it and saw the picture, like, oh, that's what happened. Mm. And then I got asked to see what I could do to like put to like suppress the show,
right?
Which I could not do because I was shown the contract that was signed upon arrival, which is unusual to have a contract like that. And it basically, you know, signed your life away, and gave people a nominal fee of $50 to sort of solidify this was, you know, a contract, which is also unusual for these sorts of things. Yes, Simone.
Did she make it on air?
Hi, Simone. The upshot was that Ali G duped so many bigger names that they didn't.
Pat Buchanan, among them.
So they never used that episode because I think there were no big names on that panel, and so I dodged a bullet there.
No, it's for those. It's funny, Bill, whatever the story is, Bill is adjacent to it in some way. We were just talking literally before hitting record about a weird love triangle.
Well,
let's
not get into that on air. let's leave that for off air.
It was, there were two TV movies made about this story.
Nothing that I was directly involved in, mind you, but
that's why I say Bill adjacent. Last thing before we move into real topics, what's up with Twitter? Why can't I retweet things anymore?
You mean that little thing that pops up asking you to, have you read the story?
Yeah, but then it won't let you. You can only comment on the tweet. You can't
When I've done it, I was still able to retweet. It just put that step in front of me first.
No, you know what? Maybe this may just be me. But I'm not able to like retweet someone else's tweet into my timeline anymore, unless I comment on it at the top.
Maybe they're beta testing different things.
Could be. I'm outraged, as you can see. Like I'm outraged, like Michael Dukakis level outrage. So this will not stand, man.
So I wouldn't expect Borat to actually impact the election. Although again, I haven't seen the Giuliani thing. It would seem that the race is not getting much better for Trump. It's a little bit of certain polls you could look at, certain bits of data that looked like a little teeny weeny bit of tightening. But when you're down, you know, 8, 9, 10 points, you need a lot of tightening, which, you know, could happen. I mean, there was a lot of tightening in polls in the last 2 weeks in 2016 in certain states, less so nationally, but some nationally. So it's not totally out of the realm of possibility, but it would seem like with an incumbent, with the pandemic rising, you've had a Hunter Biden story floating out there for a week. It hasn't done that much damage yet, it seems.
When in fact, Trump fans are saying, I saw Mike Huckabee, I saw Mark Thiessen. Trump fans and supporters are saying, get away from this story. You know, this is not, people aren't going to vote for you, Donald Trump, because they don't like Hunter Biden.
I'm sorry. I wasn't aware of this. Are you telling me that Mike Huckabee is functioning as a voice of reason?
That's my, let
and
me,
suggesting
let me just,
Donald Trump stay on message?
Let me go to Twitter here and just verify this. Cause you know, nowadays we see so much that, it's hard to know what you're seeing. It's overwhelming, but I'm given to believe that Mike Huckabee, I'm not seeing it here. Anyway, I think that I saw where Mike Huckabee was saying, yeah, here it is. It's a mistake for Trump to focus so much on Hunter Biden allegations, says Mike Huckabee.
Mike Huckabee has basically leaned into every trollish, clickbaity thing that has cropped up in the past four plus years.
This is on Fox and Friends. Yeah, it's a mistake because the average person doesn't understand it. It's too complicated, and frankly, it doesn't matter to them, Huckabee said in response to Fox and Friends host Brian Kilmeade. who asked whether Trump should emphasize this story in the campaign's closing days. They care about their health care costs, and they care about their taxes. They care about safety in their neighborhood, on their block, and in their yard. Focus on that, and he wins the election by a landslide, Huckabee suggested.
Now, I mean, I don't think he's in landslide territory just yet, but that's oddly sober analysis from Mike Huckabee.
I have no idea if the outlet I was reading is complete fake news or not, but
is this Babylon B, perhaps?
I don't think it was Babylon B. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, don't get fooled again.
So let me ask you this, Matt. So there's still chatter about a stimulus deal. If there was to be a game-changing, late-breaking thing, it would seem to be that. I mean, I don't think it'd be enough at this point, but that is the Hail Mary pass I would throw at this point. Why is Mitch McConnell standing in the way of it? Why is he telling Trump privately and telling the Senate Republican caucus that it would be a bad idea to strike a deal with Pelosi and flood voters with stimulus checks before Election Day?
I was not aware that Mitch McConnell was stopping this from happening.
I mean, I don't know if he's like literally the one person, but it's been reported that he told Trump not to do it. There's two interpretations that I've seen. One is that he's worried that it will divide the Republican caucus because mm-hmm. there are so many that don't want to do any kind of stimulus right now. And the other
they think Trump is going to lose. And when that happens, they're going to want to have some they're going to want to be able to say, I've been a fiscal conservative this whole time.
I think there's spending
was
out argument.
Of control over Trump. They would have gotten rid of another $1 trillion if I'd let them or whatever.
And I've seen, some more cynical takes from Democratic friends of mine on Twitter that they want to throttle the economy for Biden. They don't want Biden to have a good economy. So they want to ruin it now and not give him any oxygen come January. And the other thing that I saw reported in the Washington Post was that McConnell is worried about the timing of the Amy Coney Barrett vote. If you get to do a deal, that has to get prioritized because people are in need.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a much terrible, much worse look. You're saying, hey, I know you need a couple thousand dollars, but I got to get this judge through first. That would be messy. So I don't know if any of that, do you think McConnell is on politically rational ground in doing that? Or should he say, look, you should be doing what's right for this election and for Republicans generally, and getting checks in the mail is that?
Well, look, it could be that McConnell, doesn't care that much about Trump. That McConnell assumes Trump has already lost, and that McConnell is prioritizing ACB because it's his legacy getting these Supreme Court justices confirmed. And Trump will just mess up this. Trump will probably back out of the deal anyway at the last minute, or he'll say something stupid to mess up the rollout of the checks or whatever. And then McConnell's like, we've stopped the presses on Barrett, and now you're jerking me around and jerking my chain. McConnell has control over this. We're going to get this judge. Let's get this done. Enough with the foolishness. Trump had his chance. But I'm sort of team, I'm sort of team Mitch when it comes to this stuff. Because I just think, I'm not saying he's like the most noble person in the world, but I think he's like no nonsense. And I think Trump's a lot of nonsense and Mitch isn't.
I would still think I could totally see McConnell not caring about Trump and thinking Trump was DOA. So why bother trying to save his ass? But I would think McConnell still cares about the Senate and the Senate is in great jeopardy. And having, your Republican base, take a powder and be demoralized because Trump's a goner, I mean, that runs the risk of losing his majority leader spot. And he might think, well, at least I'll be minority leader. I can still filibuster things. But he has to know that there's appetite on the left to get rid of the filibuster altogether, which would completely diminish his power. So I would think if I was him, I'd be trying desperately to hold on to my Senate majority.
Yeah.
And McConnell did get through Congress, get to Trump's desk, this great outdoors law, which is not completely rinky-dink, but certainly not the biggest deal in the universe, but enough so Cory Gardner and Steve Daines can run TV ads saying, we got the bipartisan Great Outdoors Act passed to protect our lands. And that's the read that they're clinging to in these races. So it's like McConnell's never done anything non-conservative to save the bacon of vulnerable senators before.
Sure.
I think this would fall into that category.
I don't know. I don't know what it is. I mean, my speculation would be like his priority is Barrett. That's points on the scoreboard. That's his legacy. He may already factor in losing the Senate. Like, I don't know that if that's a premature thing to do. I don't think he's a quitter. But I think that he is calculating and coldly calculating, and he may already say it's a fait accompli. I'm not going to chase. Look, back to the original point, though.
Yeah.
Let me just say this. I think Trump, the only October surprise that will save him at this point is shutting up. The same thing he did in 2016. If Trump quits talking, quits tweeting, and quits talking, I think the race will narrow.
I mean, we already have this 60 Minutes debacle, which we haven't seen exactly what happened yet.
Yes.
But if that's going to be Trump's strategy, it's going to be after Sunday because
there's a debacle every day.
Yeah.
There's a controversy or a scandal every day. But if that went away, I think it would tighten. Now, we've got less than 2 weeks now, right?
Right.
And
mind you, we already have, I think, 30 million plus votes already in the can.
Yeah. So then I think we're getting to a point where there isn't an October surprise, barring some really, really bad black swan event type thing. But generally speaking, a Supreme Court pick would have ostensibly been one of the surprise, like that a seat comes open and that, so I think now we're at the point where no event is going to win it for Trump. If Trump wins, it's because we have been wrong all along about, the polling or whatever. It's because we are the sample is wrong or the assumptions are wrong and we're not paying attention to the voter registration, more Republicans registering. We're not. It's those millions of voters of non-college educated people, whites who suddenly are registering to vote, let's say. It's something to do with that, not like an October surprise.
And even that, I mean, it's a lot of straw grasping, because, I mean, it looks like we're going to get 15 million more votes this year than last year. I've seen those estimates out there because of the surge of mail voting. These voter registration margins that people keep talking about are a few hundred thousand over the past few months. It's not the voter reg Republican increases over the past 4 years. They've just done well over the past few months because they've been out canvassing and Democrats haven't, perhaps. Some of them might be Trump Democrats just kind of making it official, not that they actually have brought any new voter off the sidelines for Trump. I hear the Trump people talking about, we have 30% of our rallies, people that didn't vote in 2016. I mean, that's like a few thousand people. There aren't that many people at these rallies. We're millions and millions of people who were voting who didn't vote last time because it's easier.
Yeah.
And I have a hard time believing if Biden is winning nationally 8, 9, 10, 11 points, depending on your preferred average, that an influx of 15 million new voters is going to skew so heavily to Trump that's going to overcome that.
I was just listening to Kristen Soltis Anderson, your former DMZ partner or yes. Blogging Heads partner. She's on Jonah Goldberg's podcast, The Remnant. And she made the point that I think is really important for people, especially young people who don't remember all this. One of the reasons why a lot of us didn't really take Trump completely seriously was because in 2012, so when I was working at the Daily Caller in 2012, there were reports of Mitt Romney having these huge rallies in Pennsylvania and Bucks County and stuff, and people, more people, you know, Bob Costa tweeted that his mom was at a rally and she, there's never been, you know, has been living there forever and there's never been this many people at a rally, you know. And then Romney and his people were arguing that the polls were wrong, that right. the polls were skewed. Right. I think they were called poll truthers. And there was a big fight.
Unskew the polls.
Unskew. There was a big fight. And I was saying, look, I don't know. Like, I was open-minded. But there were people like, as I recall, the Nate Silvers of the world were pushing back hard against Romney. And I was sort of open-minded saying, like, I think I wrote a piece about this as like Schrodinger's campaign. Like, maybe, you know, we're going to find out, but like maybe Romney is right or maybe he's wrong. Well, it turned out that the Romney people were wrong. The polls were right and the rallies didn't matter. So that was 2012. Fast forward to 2016. And Trump is having these big rallies in places like Pennsylvania. And you know, essentially people like me, even though I was, I gave Trump a better chance or I thought he was going to do better than a lot of people did. At the end of the day, when it came to a state like Pennsylvania, I thought, well, here's Mitt Romney all over again. Mm-hmm. I remember what Romney, the spin that Romney's people were trying to give us about the polls and the rallies. And like, it just, it's fool's gold. They always say we're going to win Pennsylvania. Back when I was a conservative, I mean, I still am, back when I was rooting for Republicans, and the two things were synonymous, we always win. They always say we are going to win Pennsylvania, and we never do. And so then I sort of downplayed Trump's chances maybe a little bit because I was thinking about what happened in 2012. Kirsten Soltis Anderson was basically saying that she did the same thing. Now here we are in 2020. And we're still sort of fighting the last war, except this time we don't want to look like fools again because we remember what happened when everyone thought Trump was going to lose. So now the question is, are we calibrating our analysis and our commentary? Are we skewing it not based on anything rational, but are we doing it based on fear of looking, of, you know, with, you know, in the back of our heads, remembering what happened in 2016.
I mean, it's not unhealthy to inject uncertainty in your punditry because we don't want to assume we know more than we do. And so it can be worth sort of going through the exercise. If we were wrong, what why would that be? I've seen Sean Trendy do that and a couple others. But look at what the polls did actually say in 2012 and 2016. And forgive me if I'm repeating some of my shareable content from yesterday. You know, 2012, Nate Silver was correct when he said, even though the national polling is very tight in, you know, mid to late October, the state polling was not as tight and more stable. And that was borne out on election day. There were extremely few close states on election day. Only four states were within 5 points, which is very unusual for an otherwise close race. That's how polarized the country had become. So Nate Silver's state averages, you know, told that story ahead of time. Look at 2016.
And let me just put a pin in that real quick.
Yeah.
I don't want to go back and fight a war from 8 years ago. But as I recall, I was trying to just throw in the, like, let's just be open-minded about this. Like, Romney's people are saying that you're using, like, a wrong methodology, mm-hmm. or, you know, you're not counting enough non-college education, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't know the answer to that, but I'm open to the possibility. Mm-hmm. And I think the Nate Silvers of the world, as I recall, and I'm just using him as a stand-in for a certain type of wonk, really put the hammer down and tried to shame. And there was like a piece in The Atlantic that called, like, said that, like, I was included in a list of people who did commentary for people who don't understand math. Something to that. It's very condescending. Because I was just questioning, like, look, with polling, if you mess up an assumption, then you could get all the math right. But if you just make a wrong assumption about who's going to turn out, then everything else is wrong. In 2012, they were right. The pollsters were right.
Now, there's an argument that some of the 2016 polling was wrong because it didn't account enough for the non-college white vote that surged in the race. They weren't weighting by education enough. And I'm not second-guessing any of that.
That's what Kirsten Soltis Anderson says.
But put that aside, you could see in the available polling in 2016 that something was up, because Hillary's numbers nationally in the key states, they were soft. They were, you know, mid 40s, you know, sort of mid to upper 40s. They were not cracking 50. And you could see the Trump surge happening. You could see upward movement for Trump in Michigan, in Florida, in North Carolina, in Ohio, in Iowa, to some extent nationally. You know, remember, Clinton was at 7 points in the RCP average nationally in, I think, about 3 weeks out. By about two weeks out, it narrowed to 5. Then the Comey letter happens 11 days out, and then it narrows further. Then it narrows down to 3. So, you know, at the time, people like me were saying, well, it's some natural tightening. She's still ahead. She's been ahead almost all the way through. It's hard to
remember our last DMZ before the election.
Not precisely, but I have a rough idea of what I was saying.
I mean, the gist of it was I was starting to freak out a little bit that Trump could win, and you were a calming.
And I think I own my error.
Everyone got it wrong, right? Almost.
But you can look back and see the data and say, oh, that's what I missed. Trump, you know, made up like 9 points in Michigan in the last 2 weeks.
But the problem is, at the time, Bill, you didn't see it, which suggests to me you may not be seeing it now.
Well, there's nothing to either. See right now. that's my point.
I guess my point is, almost everybody got 2016 wrong. I got 2016 wrong. But my point is, you could always look back and do, you know, retroactively, like, look back and do an analysis and say, we should have seen this.
But there's nothing. But right now, I mean, great, we got 2 weeks to go. Maybe something will happen and the numbers will change. Right now, Biden is over 50%. Nationally, and in a number of the key, I haven't checked every single state. I mean, I think he's either over 50 or close to 50 in almost all the battlegrounds. You know, there's the main battlegrounds. He is 6 and over. I think Pennsylvania, he dipped in RCP, but not in 538. So there's a bit of a debate about that. But I think most people will say the 538 average is better in that respect. And then Arizona is still 3 to 4. It's not close in any respect right now. The close states are the reach states: Georgia, Iowa, Texas, North Carolina, the states that he doesn't need.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying things aren't possible going forward, but they will be detectable, because there were things in 2012 and 2016 that were detectable if you were looking closely enough. Right now, you can't detect anything.
You and I were watching this 2016 race pretty closely.
I mean, we
didn't detect.
I didn't detect it.
I started to, at very late, I started to detect something. But I still thought, you know, we could go back and look at my map. I think I gave Trump Florida and North Carolina, but I didn't give him Pennsylvania. I remember that. I thought Hillary would win Pennsylvania. We didn't detect everything back then, so why would we now? Like I'm just playing devil's advocate.
I mean, but where I had my blinders on in 2016 was when you see Michigan go from down 12 to down 3 in a short period of time. If it wasn't Donald Trump, if it was a normal Republican candidate, you might conclude he's on an upward swing that could keep going forward past the window of the last poll and lead to a victory on election night. But I think a lot of us thought, you know, that undecided voter goes in the voting booth and just can't do it for Donald Trump because Donald Trump is insane. Whereas a lot of those folks went the other way and thought Hillary Clinton was, you know, devil incarnate. But I think
the difference is the lesson we learned. I think the lesson you learned is to pay closer attention to the numbers. And if those numbers start moving, don't write it off. I think the lesson I learned is we don't know anything, and be very nervous. And this may be, and this just to circle back to my original point. I think the danger for me is that I am always fighting the last war, right? So in 2016, I'm not going to get fooled again by the Republican spin. Therefore, I didn't believe the spin about rallies and all that. And then I was wrong. And so this time, I'm learning the lesson from 2016, which is never count Trump out. You know, there's some magic. There's some Trump magic. Don't be, you know, I'm chastened by what happened in 2016. Don't get fooled again. And I could end up getting fooled because I'm allowing the fear or the emotions for 2016 to cloud my analysis of 2020, when in fact almost all of the metrics, Bill, suggest that this is not a close race, and that if 2016 were not in the back of my head, in the back of all of our head, we would probably the closest analogy would probably be Bob Dole's loss to Bill Clinton in 1996.
I mean, even Harry Truman, there weren't that many polls back then, but you know, it's always talked about how polling showed Dewey winning the whole time, Dewey defeats Truman, Chicago Tribune, all that stuff. But there were two polls in October, just two that I'm aware of. And there might have been a couple more that I've seen two specifically. There was Gallup, late October, 5 points. National Opinion Political Research, 2 points, 2 point race. Late October, 1948. But again, a lot of the newspaper editors dismissed those late numbers because it had been so stable for so long, again, with much more sporadic polling, that they just couldn't believe it. But the number was there. Yeah. The race was tightening, even with what limited data they had at the time.
We couldn't believe, in 2016, we couldn't believe that Donald Trump was going to beat Hillary Clinton.
Right.
Just no matter what the data said. That was a intellectual leap to believe that
Correct.
Trump could actually beat her.
Correct. And so even though...
Because America, the idea of America... And I just had lunch with Mom, by the way. She's still not voting. Just had lunch with Mom.
That's a lost vote for Trump. That's demoralized Republican base if she stays home.
Yeah. And I went through just lamenting, Bill. Marco Rubio. I say what you will about Marco Rubio today, but I went through reminding my mom that it wasn't just a binary choice between Trump and Hillary, but we, meaning Republican primary voters, chose Trump instead of Marco Rubio, instead of Ted Cruz, instead of Carly Fiorina, instead of Ben Carson, instead of Scott Walker. We chose. And we could have had the first Hispanic president could have been a young Marco Rubio. And from a personal standpoint, Bill, totally selfish, I very well could have been positioned to be one of the leading Rubio defenders. I'd probably have been invited to the White House Christmas party. President Rubio would probably be coming on my podcast. And instead, we got Donald bleeping Trump.
Where's my Joe Biden podcast? I'm not getting any of these riches.
You need to parlay that to make it happen.
Let me, since you bring up Rubio, so I had a column for Real Clear Politics this week, which I went as far as naming names of Republicans in the Senate.
He named names
that Joe Biden could ostensibly take a crack at working with upon becoming president. Because the question always comes up. You know, Biden himself said in the town hall last week, I promise you, he said, there'll be 4 to 8 Republicans who will work with me and vote for bills where there is bipartisan consensus. And of course, I think to most skeptics, they would say, name them. Who are these people? Once you get past Murkowski and Romney, where do you go from there? Now, mind you, 4 to 8 might not be enough. If it's a 50-50 Senate or 51-49, he needs more than 8. But I went as far as the thinking about, okay, if there is to be more than just Collins and Murkowski, who might it be? Who might it be? If we're not going to look at these folks as just a monolithic blob of Mitch McConnell's, are there openings anywhere? And I talked about this with Liz Mayer on my Shareable series a few days ago. I drew out some of her insights. But I think from my perspective, what it comes down to is, are there going to be folks who, one, Biden has the personal relationships with to work with? Some of the old dogs like Chuck Grassley or Richard Shelby, John Cornyn, if he survives. John Cornyn is starting to pull away from Trump right now. You know, people that he has dealt with when he was in the Senate. Are there folks who are going to put their home state interest ahead of party or ideological interest? You know, granted, of course, they have not to date, but is getting beat by 10 points and having a big blue wave on the Senate, does that focus the mind? Does a Rob Portman shift in Ohio? Does a Richard Burr shift in North Carolina? Again, going back to Grassley, you know, some folks said, well, you know, Grassley needs to not go rogue because he has family members that want to rise in Iowa. Well, if Iowa's turning blue, maybe Chuck Grassley realizes I gotta edge a little bit to be have my brand name be good for the family.
Wait till the Lewis dynasty in West Virginia emerges, Bill. It's happening.
And there are certain folks that have their idiosyncrasies.
I just need Manchin to get reelected like one or two more times, and then we unleash.
Jim Inhofe, who Democrats hate for being a climate science denier. He is a big infrastructure guy and has even been supportive of raising the gas tax to fund infrastructure. What if Lindsey Graham survives in South Carolina, but it's really close? Does he resurrect his old friendship with good old Joe? How can you hate Joe Biden? You have to be a cold, dark soul to hate Joe Biden. Now again, I'm not arguing any of this stuff is probable. I'm not saying.
There's two arguments in favor of it, right? Mm. One argument is Republicans, you know, when Obama was president, they made this decision not to work with him.
Right.
I would argue, he also made a decision not to work with them. That's a controversial point, but I don't think Obama was much on courting these Republicans. I could see Biden, number one, I could see Biden being better at courting senators and visiting with them, going to lunch with them, calling them whatever, building a personal relationship with them. Even if he does, he may already have one. But, you know, then secondly, you know, Republicans, they decided, you know, the strategy is going to be like, give Obama no wins. And grind it out, and we'll get back on top. And to a certain degree, it did work. But, man, it was a rough for America. I would just say it's been a rough few years. And I just wonder if the appetite's there to go through that again, the recalcitrance.
Well, that's the question. And especially after – if you lose by a lot – Again, you know, Mitch McConnell might not, he may not be the Grinch whose heart grows three sizes after the 10-point drubbing, but a Rob Portman might shift. Chuck Grassley might shift. I mean, Ben Sasse.
Especially if Biden starts off with something like infrastructure, if he courts them, if he's, goes out of his way. I mean, remember Obama? I don't want to rehash, but Obama talking about elections have consequences, mm-hmm. and John, you lost, mm-hmm. and he had some snippy.
Well, I mean, I don't think it's fair to say Obama was dismissive of bipartisanship. He tried in many respects. He got it in more areas than people give him credit for, and this also gives credit to certain Republicans. I mean, as I've said before, the only bill that got to his desk with no Republicans on board was Obamacare. Everything else he did sign into law had some Republicans, maybe just one, depending on the bill. But there was always a few. And there are some things that are more robust, like Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal, the criminal justice reform from to the Fair Sentencing Act. That was a voice vote. Food safety regs had a more robust Republican support. The nuclear treaty with Russia. Got, the two-thirds ratification.
And other stuff unilaterally that that was
down the line. That was second term.
That was late.
I mean, he reached a point, they had the bipartisan support for immigration in the Senate. And then when they couldn't get it in the House, I mean, that was kind of between that and blocking the DC circuit mm-hmm. judges. Like that was the breaking point for bipartisanship. The 2010 tax cut deal, was a big thing of bipartisanship, which I've argued. I don't think Obama gets reelected without that 2010 tax cut deal. I think that was the last dose of stimulus that he got him over 2012. That led to the fiscal cliff deal, which, Biden had a big role in negotiating. So to your point, Obama seemed to not be that good at doing the deal himself.
Yes.
And he
used Biden to be that guy, right?
Right. I mean, both Boehner and McConnell have said things that Obama would talk down to them, be condescending, lecture them, and that's not Biden's way. McConnell said,
I should go through. I interviewed McConnell in 2016, and I should go find, I have the video and audio, but I should go dig it out, because when McConnell was criticizing Obama, I think he might have talked about how good it was to negotiate with Joe Biden.
Right. I mean, he gave a tribute to Biden on the floor of the Senate at the end of 2016, where he said, time to call Joe was the code of my office for when it's time to get serious. So I'm not expecting McConnell to be a big help to Joe Biden. I suspect Biden will have to work around McConnell. But they do have a relationship. Biden can't pick up the phone and talk to them and see what he can get out of them.
I think McConnell, say what you will about him, but I feel like you could – I don't think he is in for malarkey. Like I think you could call McConnell – and try to cut a deal, and he'll either say yes or no. But if he's sort of going to stick by that commitment, mm-hmm. Whereas with Trump, he backs out of deals, mm-hmm. he feigns, it's just there's so much BS associated with it, And the problem with Obama, according to McConnell, was that Obama would try to like argue with you about what, you're like a 60-year-old Senate majority leader or minority leader. You don't need Obama trying to like persuade you that you're wrong ideologically. Like just accept that I am where I am and now let's make a deal. Mm. And according to McConnell, Obama was trying to like lecture him and like change his mind on like core beliefs. Mm. Whereas Biden would come in and be like, okay, Mitch, this is where Mitch is. This is where we are. How do we get to the middle here?
Right. And I don't necessarily know if Boehner and McConnell are being fair in their characterization of Obama, but it's just as a matter of plain fact,
yeah.
Biden was the guy doing those deals at the end of the day. Whatever it is that Obama, I think Obama's got a ton of skills and he's one of the best politicians that the Democratic Party has ever seen, but we don't have evidence of him being the guy in the room getting that final handshake.
That's well, it's hard to be everything. I mean, how do you be like the charismatic, big picture, hope and change guy and also a backroom backslapping Paul, I mean, good luck finding one, I'm still waiting for Tip O'Neill to give that like big inspirational, I guess it ain't going to happen at this point. But you get my point. Right. It's a different skill set, you know?
Well, this is why I would – I mean, I understand people's skepticism and cynicism here. It's not like – I mean, all the people that I name, it's not like there's some fantastic track record of bipartisanship for any of these people. I mean, even Mitt Romney is mostly performative in his bipartisanship. You know, he voted to convict Trump, but beyond that hasn't broken ranks on much of anything.
But I don't think that's fair because – Mitt Romney, I think, is voting his conscience. And he's a center-right person, and that's how he's voting. But, you know.
But if any of them thought that bipartisanship and comedy and stability was of paramount importance, I mean, Susan Collins, to make a point I've made earlier, she could have led with judicial nominations from the start and said, I'm not going to let you put forth a partisan judge. I'm going to insist it's a bipartisan process and use my vote and my bully pulpit to achieve that. None of these guys ever did that. None of these guys tried to push back in that regard. So it's so I'm not arguing someone should have a lot of hope and faith here. But I also
I do think you have
a guy in Joe Biden, like this is his thing.
Yeah.
He does have a track record in doing this. Why would
And the Republicans could be exhausted. I mean, I don't want to sound naive either, but when you had 8 years of a strategy basically of gridlock, and then you had the chaos of Trump and you enabled him. And as a result, you were both humiliated. You were humiliated by him and you also got a drubbing as a result of it. And the voters have sent a message like these people could be – you may be a stubborn politician, but are they going to want to once again go into like, okay, let's just – batten down the hatches and give him nothing. Gridlock again. Let's not get anything done. Like, I have to believe that there's going to be a desire among some of them. It's like, okay, we've had our time of fighting, our time of like, you know, of resistance or whatever, but like, let's get something done.
Well, and then the flip side of that is Biden ran on bipartisanship in the primary, in the general, as are the Democratic Senate candidates. A good number of them will probably win. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense for the Democrats to then not follow through right away and go nuclear and the other Republicans to go take a hike and then ran through a bunch of stuff. It flies in the face of what they ran on and what seemed to work and what the public actually wants. Now, there's value in certain Democrats pushing that line to give Biden negotiating leverage.
I fear that it's more than that. I mean,
I think it is to most of those
politicians
folks.
Always overinterpret their mandate. If there's a drubbing, I mean, if Biden wins and the Democrats take the Senate, there is going to be a temptation to overread that mandate.
I think that's there in spades right now.
And you say, look, we've got 6 months to get anything we want done. That's reality, because after that, we're going into the midterms. People get cold feet. If you want to do something big and bold and progressive, it has to be in the first 6 months of 2021. And therefore, we got to get rid of the filibuster. They're not going to work with us anyway. We got to draw. Let's just go in there.
I mean, and that's not without its logic. I mean, that logic is driven by the notion of sort of mandates are kind of mythical. What matters is, do you deliver? So who cares what the polls say right now or what the public mood is? You get through what you can get through, however you can do it. And then it's done. And then you'll see that people like it. And then that's what helps you going forward. Or if they don't like it, they'll realize they like it down the line. You'll eventually get the political benefits for it. And I agree with that up until the point you talk about getting rid of the filibuster. Because if you get rid of the filibuster to do it, it becomes all that much easier to repeal it if people don't like how you did it and what exactly you did. And if the payoff isn't right there right away, you know, you might think it's popular, but it won't be immediately. That backlash could come in fast and furious, and then they just rip it out from the roots as soon as they get the chance.
I think a point we haven't explicitly said is there are really two different Biden presidencies. And I think Biden has not been explicit about which Biden we're going to get. I mean, we could get the Joe Biden who is a uniter, not a divider, who is a return to normalcy and institutions and tries to be bipartisan. Or we could get the other Joe Biden, which is basically Biden going against his track record and his probably his instincts, being guided by the left. We don't really know exactly. I think you feel pretty strongly that it's the former.
Well, I think it's going to start there. I don't think Biden's going to start going partisan. I think Biden, you know, Biden's talked this way, not just for this campaign, but for his whole career. I think you can see in his responses to a lot of these questions, he's pretty adamant about it. And he talks about how he beat the socialists and he's not going to be like that. And I think he's going to feel like I won this damn thing. I'm going to do things my way. Now, if it doesn't work, then you might get, you know, Biden 2.0.
Yeah.
But my guess is he wants to play this the way he thinks it should be played.
And, you know, look, I think there is some merit to the point you've been making about having the threat. You know, I can't control these guys.
Yeah.
You know, I don't endorse that because
don't make threats you don't want to deliver on.
Well, I don't want to open the door to blowing up the filibuster and certainly court packing, and I feel like it's a, you know, even talking about it kind of normalizes that, you know, but I think you could make an argument that like we've gotten into this very dysfunctional cycle and something has to shake it loose. And if Biden can use the threat of, you know, the left and of these nuclear weapons, peace to achieve peace through strength. Because right, part of the problem fundamentally has been we've had decades now of two political parties being, there's a lot of parity. Both of them believe that they're on the verge of a permanent governing majority. Both of them believe that they're on the verge of extinction. Both of them believe that they are losing the culture. And if one party clearly had, you know, the wind at its back, then maybe you could get some things done or whatever. So it's very interesting. Part of what concerns me is this entire theory bill, the glue that holds this entire theory together is the assumption that Joe Biden is going to stay alive because there's nobody else who believes this. Like Joe Biden is the one guy who's going to say, I won the race. I want to be moderate. I want to be like, there's no reason to believe if Joe Biden's out of the picture, if Kamala takes over or whatever.
Well, you know,
anyone else other than like, we're relying on one man.
Well, I don't think it's just Joe Biden. I think, you know, Manchin, Sinema, Coons, Feinstein, Carper, and, you know, people who might be coming in, Cunningham, Hickenlooper, Hagar, Ossoff, even Sarah Gideon, you know, said the other day she wants to bring back judicial filibusters, and that's in Maine. So I think you might get a more robust moderate caucus after this election. And one thing I said in my Real Clear Politics piece is, you know, Biden has certain relationships, but a lot of the people he served with are not there anymore. Maybe Kamala.
Funny SNL skit. Biden shows up like at the offices of people thinking they're still in the Senate and they're not there. And they're usually they could all be segregationists if you want to really have fun with it.
It's possible that Kamala could fill in some of the gaps that Biden doesn't have. You know, her bipartisanship record is pretty light. You know, the Lugar Center has a bipartisan index where they based on your sponsorship of bills, and Kamala's pretty low on that list. But she has some. She's worked with Tim Scott and Rand Paul on criminal justice matters. Now, of course, she Rand, she worked with Tim Scott on anti-lynching, which Rand Paul was the single senator to block. And so Kelly wasn't very happy about that. But she has some relationship with him on other criminal justice matters. She has a bill with Sass and Cornyn and Boozman of Arkansas. And there are a couple others that she had a bill with on him. It's in the piece. I still remember the top of my head. So there are some newbies that she has had some interaction with. And she may be able to be deployed to talk to some folks that Biden doesn't have the same background with.
Yeah.
Well, before we wrap up, though, I know we've been talking a lot. Quick thoughts on the debate. Is there anything Trump can do that would be better than what he did last time? And does having the muted mic for the first 2 minutes help or hurt him?
Ironically, it might help him. I think it would be a mistake to try to there was a method to the madness in the first debate, right? I mean, obviously Trump thought he could get Biden to have a senior moment or a meltdown, and that would be like a silver bullet. Mm-hmm. That solves all your problems. Mm-hmm. You know, Biden, you know, basically implodes. You know, maybe if Trump had let Biden talk, it would have been better for Trump in that regard. But there was a method to the madness. This time, though, I think it would be obviously a big mistake to try that again. What Trump could just do is try to, you know, I think if Trump tried to be like, I don't know if he tried, but if Trump could be a normal politician.
Change the tone. New tone.
I mean, yeah, this is it, right? This is the last big moment. And it would be disarming. It would be unsettling if Trump actually came out and said, look, I've made some mistakes. I've gotten to know you these past 4 years. You've gotten to know me, warts and all. You know, if he could do something like that, well, maybe not with the Bill Clinton accent, because that would be weird if he just did it, you know, a Bill Clinton impersonation. But you get my point.
I would agree.
And then just take his phone and lock him in the basement for the next 10 days.
I mean, I don't think he can do a wholesale personality, you know, transformation. And I think if he tried, it would look weird. And I doubt he's even capable of it. Yeah. He's been so belligerent all month. I mean, he just seems to be ramping up the belligerence every day, like he knows nothing else. And I think if he was on, you know, full tilt, that's obviously bad for him because it's not working for him. I think the thing that would work the best for him is just to be able to say, look, I know you don't always like the way I do things. I know that my style, you know, rubs some people the wrong way. But look at what I've done. Here's what my accomplishments are. And you and I know that that stuff is overhyped nonsense.
But even he can't do that because he wants to also be the victim and talk about how they wouldn't let him get anything done.
Well, I mean, being a crybaby and a whiner is not a good look. I mean, he's managed to be a whiner for a very long time and get away with it, mind you.
Yeah.
But clearly it's catching up with him. You know, the only way you can close strong is put aside all of the performative stuff and look at what I've done. I'm not going to pretend I'm going to be a different person. All I can do is argue that, you know, if you're going to take the good and the bad with me, here's what the good is.
Yeah. It's funny though, because if he loses, as we think he will, it'll be really easy to look back and say, of course he was going to lose. Like, there's a pandemic and he totally mishandled it. Mm-hmm. And he,
He was losing before them. He just in Pennsylvania this week, he was like, I wasn't going to come to Erie, Pennsylvania because I was winning so bigly. And then the pandemic hit. That was not true. He was losing the whole time, every day. Never been 50% approval. Never been close to buying the polls. Always bad. People have been not liking him for a long time.
Point. We could say that. Of course he was going to lose. He's never been over 50%. Mm-hmm. His approval rating's never been over 50%. And of course he's going to lose. But you could have said that about Access Hollywood too, right? I mean, it's crazy.
But I mean, the takeaway of a loss is not, oh, the pandemic hit, what, and that ruined him. The takeaway is being a nonstop, divisive, belligerent, destroyer of alliances, to be so ruthlessly partisan you can barely get anything through Congress, to deliver nothing for the public beyond, you know, maintaining an economic growth trajectory that you were already on, and otherwise be a jerk nonstop. That is not the way to expand your base from what was a very small base to begin with. You can't just attribute it to the pandemic, because he was already losing at that point.
Part of the thing with Trump is, you know, I've talked about this before. I worked at the Leadership Institute for 4 years, and basically, you know, one of the guys that I did some work with is this guy, Robert Cahaly, who is with this Trafalgar pollster group that Cahaly was right about Trump in 2016 and was one of the few people saying Trump was going to win. And now their polling is saying that Trump's going to win again. Now, I don't know if he's right or wrong, but he was one of the people that I encountered back in those days. And we did campaign training for conservatives. And then I've read, Bill, a lot of, you know, self-help books, Dale Carnegie, Stephen Covey, leadership books, John Maxwell, James Strock, Reagan on leadership, Churchill on leadership, Lincoln on leadership. And Bill, you're a fan of the presidential biographies. You read biographies and you can pick up lessons and maxims and all that. And Trump basically defied everything. Everything that I know about how to run a campaign, how to behave as a leader, how to win friends and influence people, all those things. Trump does the opposite. And so his victory in 2016 really undermined a lot of the maxims that we teach our kids, that we teach young people about leadership and how to be successful. It wasn't just how to be a good person, but it was, you know, if you're punctual, if you are cordial, if you do whatever these things are, you will get ahead. And if you don't, you won't. And Trump managed to get ahead by being a horrible person and doing everything that we teach people to do. He did the opposite and he won. And I think that this is a referendum on that as well. I mean, if Trump wins again, I question all sorts of things that I've built my life on. But if he, and also my faith in the American public, but if Trump loses, then I guess it's a way of saying, aha, you can't. Gravity does reassert itself. You can't go against all of these really tried and true leadership, you know, wisdom keys, whatever you want to call them. It will catch up to you. It'll come back to you, as old people used to say to me as they would shake their finger. It'll come back to you. What goes around comes around.
So in your heart, Matt, in your heart, you want Joe Biden to win.
Well, that's your word, not mine. So I think it depends what Biden we get, too.
Well, the chance of getting the bipartisan Biden is better than the devil you know, which destroys everything you believe was good in humanity. So I would think, in your heart of hearts, you want Joe Biden to win.
Well, when you put it like that, Bill, we talked about, I don't want to relitigate all my problems. I mean, I could. You want to talk about?
You're getting Amy Coney Barrett. Just vote for Biden.
Well, could talk about taxpayer funding of abortion.
You got your court.
Well, look, I will say this, Bill. I'm not going to vote for either of them, but I will say this. It may be that the best scenario for a Matt Lewis conservative is, you know, Amy Coney Barrett in the court, Biden as president if he doesn't pack the court, and Republicans keeping the Senate. Like, that could be, it may be that that's the most sort of center right, combination that you could have.
Have you seen a Biden sign where you are in West Virginia?
Oh, yeah. A lot of them. In fact, I have been told that Biden is going to win my county.
Wow.
Which I...
Because that was not the case 4 years ago, right?
No, no way. I'll believe it when I see it. But that's what I've been told by people who would know. And I can't tell you. I see a lot of Trump signs. I see a lot of Biden signs.
Do you know a Trump Biden voter among your neighbors?
No, but that probably says more about me not knowing enough people. Mm-hmm. We do have neighbors who are sort of in the same space as me that are just they're always voted Republican their whole life, live in West Virginia, but can't bring themselves to pull the lever for Trump, but didn't vote for him in 16 either.
Mm-hmm. And you can't pick up any intel from your church if there are any Biden voters there.
My church is probably hardcore Trump. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I've been told that Biden is going to win this county or is winning this county.
Wow.
As of now. So
very interesting.
I'm skeptical that he will, but just judging by signs, there's a lot more Biden signs than I would have imagined.
Wow. Well, that's why when I look at the polling, like the polling in 2012, you know, the national number wasn't quite indicative of what was happening at the state level. Whereas Biden being 8, 9, 10, you're seeing that kind of filter through all the states. You know, red states are a little less red. You know, light red states are becoming pink. Pink states are becoming purple. You know, it seems pretty consistent across the board that there is a whole trend going on.
Yeah. It's going to be an interesting couple of weeks. I think I'm going to go vote because we've got a state senator here that we like. She, because Trump is in trouble, even though she's not really Trumpy, she's in trouble. Mm-hmm. So I may go vote just for her.
Which one? But you'll leave the top line blank?
I'll write in Ronald Reagan like my boyhood hero, Larry Hogan.
If you do that, you're voting for Ron Reagan Jr. He is the only living Ronald Reagan. So why would you do that?
Ronald Wilson, is he Ronald Wilson?
Reagan? I assume it's Jr.
Fair point. I'll leave it blank.
All right. Good show.
It had its ups and downs, I think.
We shall DM Zoom post-debate on Friday?
Yeah, we need to figure out a time. And then we should think, do we want to take a little hiatus, maybe after the elections, do we want to keep going every week or do we want to take a little hiatus
I don't think things are going to be dull after the election, so I don't know.
Probably not. Probably. Maybe we could take a week or something. But,
okay.
Let's talk. Oh, are you going to be the debate? So Friday we'll DM Zoom.
Right.
And that's for people who want to support our, you know, I have a podcast, and you are working on this really cool podcast project, which is going to be out pretty soon now, right?
I'm expecting to have that launch next month.
So people who want to help support, you know, long form conversation or the podcast, they can do it at Patreon. And then we invite them every week on these calls. This week is going to be great timing because there's a debate Thursday night. And then on Friday, we'll have that exclusive VIP Zoom call. We call it the DM Zoom, where we could talk about the debate. Are you going to – you've got this YouTube page or your YouTube channel.
Yep.
God, I sound old. You've got this YouTube page. You have a YouTube channel called Shareable.
Yep.
Are you going to be live sharing?
Yeah, I think I'll live stream the debate tomorrow. I got to just work it out with the family as usual, but I think I will do that as I have been for the last two debates. They've been appreciated. And you know, there's the live chat feature on YouTube Live, so if we want to watch together, post some questions, I will do my best to answer, and we'll have a good time.
And see, I almost always have to write about these debates after they're over. If I didn't have to do that, I would say you and I should like immediately do a response, yeah. You know, but we'll save it for the next, maybe we should do it the next morning.
Well, we're DM Zooming on Friday, so.
That's what I'm saying. But, you know, we you know, sometimes we do morning, sometimes we do afternoon. we can, I'll have my agents contact yours and they can hash that out.
All right. Well, I'll talk to you tomorrow and as well as next week.
All right. See you guys.
Take care.
Follow us on Twitter at DMZ Show. See you, Bill.
Bye-bye.